Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WEBF FX Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And joining us on the Commons today, we have someone who hasn't been with us for a very long time, and that's Senator Mike Schneider of Nevada. Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
It's been a while, as I said, and so we're going to get caught up on what you've been doing and what's going on in Nevada and how your common interest community panel is working out. Just before we started recording, you told me that the state is having financial problems like a lot of other places, including a lot of HOA. So maybe we'll touch a little bit on that as well. But tell us what you've been up to.
Well, you know, this is it's a citizen legislature here, Stu, so I've been trying to make money so I can afford this nasty habit I have of politics.
And it's a habit. Is that what it is?
Yeah. I guess the only good thing about it, it is addictive like drugs, but you don't wind up in as bad a shape. But it is a bad habit, so I'm trying to cure, you know.
And you just got back from a meeting?
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah.
So it's 10 o'clock in the morning your time. So
right.
What time did you start?
Well, I started this morning about 7. We did yesterday. We had hearings yesterday, most of the day. And so it's like a never-ending thing. You know, you have the interim committee hearings and things like that. You know, politics, even though it's supposed to be part-time, it can be full-time if you let it.
If you let it, that's the operative word.
Yeah. So you have to set some time for your family and some time for your own business, and hopefully you can balance that and still make a living and keep your marriage together.
Well, that's always a good idea to do. So, not a marriage counselor, but let that go for now. But you told me that you're having financial problems in Nevada. You said it was the second worst state.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
After what, California?
After Michigan.
After Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, so you're ahead of California then?
Yes, percentage-wise.
And Illinois, where does that fall in? Because I've heard a lot about Illinois as well.
Well, we're worse than Illinois, that's for sure. And it's basically the, if you look at Michigan, of course, has the big auto industry and that manufacturing, and that's what has them in bad shape. But then the rest of the nation, it's basically the sand states with sand. And because we rely on tourism so much, that has absolutely killed our economy. You know, people quit traveling, they quit spending their money. So I know that Arizona's in bad shape, Nevada's in bad shape, of course California, same thing, Hawaii, Florida, and so that's what I call the sand states.
The sand states. I've never heard it called that before, but that's interesting. I guess the thing is that people across the country are having a hard time, and they're not coming to Las Vegas and gambling and going to the show, so that's affecting you guys probably more so than some of the other states.
Correct. Uh-huh.
And the tourists. And California, or Florida, I keep hearing about Florida. Nobody's moving to Florida. They're
right.
Trying to entice the retirees down there, and they don't have the money to move down there.
Right.
And, of course, HOAs across the board, Mike, are just failing. They're falling apart. They have no money either. They're bankrupt. Half of them are vacant.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have been plagued by foreclosures. Unfortunately, the HOAs are continuing to foreclose. They keep whining about how, you know, there's no income coming in, but then they're making things even worse by foreclosing, and there's some funny business going on there.
Mm-hmm. You're correct. Actually, I'll tell you what, you know, I predicted this years ago that this would happen, and a lot of these people run HOAs, the board members, they're kind of like tin-horn politicians, and they don't understand, though. You know, they think they can do whatever they want, they have unlimited budgets, and they just don't understand the functions of a board, the functions of society, and all that. And they get themselves into a jackpot. And actually, here in Nevada, our foreclosure rate is about, I think we're, it's between Las Vegas and Detroit as the two highest foreclosure rates in the nation. And in Las Vegas, we had that big bubble, and we had investors coming here from California to buy houses, and a lot of those went into foreclosure. Those investors walked away, so we have foreclosed properties. Then we had a lot, we've had a lot of people that bought work for the resort hotels here, and of course that business is way off, and some of them been laid off or their hours cut way back, and here they go into foreclosure. So it's kind of like a spiral down. And so the HOAs, or some of these people are, you know, you're right, they're pretty stupid. We if they would not get in the way and actually work with the people, they could keep their HOAs afloat better than what they're doing. We have passed a law here in Nevada that says the banks must maintain the properties.
For how long?
As long as they own them.
Oh, okay. But, all right, let's say that somebody went into, you know, and defaulted on their mortgage, and the bank waited for a while before they foreclosed, because they're having too many properties to carry themselves, and then they actually foreclose, and they're required to make HOA payments from the day they acquire the property, correct?
Correct.
What about in arrears?
6 months.
So it goes back 6 months in arrears.
Right.
To before they foreclosed.
Right.
You know what's happening in Florida?
Mm-hmm.
The banks are refusing to foreclose because they don't want to pay the HOA fees.
Yeah. Well, I understand. But at that point in time, if they don't foreclose, this is what would puzzle me. If they don't foreclose, that means the homeowner could still be there.
Yes.
If the homeowner is not paying his mortgage,
he's not paying his HOA dues.
Then he should pay his HOA dues. I mean, it seems to me like good neighbors would get together and talk, and they would say, hey, you know what? Yeah, you're going to be foreclosed on, all that, but what's going on? You haven't made a payment in a year. Can you pay your HOA dues and maintain this place while you live here? And I think with proper consultation with these delinquent homeowners, I think they would, because if they're not making that $1,500 a month payment or whatever, they can make the $150 a month HOA's dues. And I think that is an easy thing to negotiate out with people.
Well, here's the problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about good neighbors. The culture of HOAs is to divide, separate, and not be good neighbors. I keep telling CAI that the very concept of an HOA absolutely kills communities. Well, I don't call them communities. I call them projects now, because that's in essence what they are.
Yeah, and I would agree with you that is what happens. It's like pitting neighbor against neighbor in many of these HOAs, and it shouldn't be.
It's the whole concept. I mean, it's designed, basically, whether it was done intentionally or not, I don't know, but the fact is that it just creates this sense of animosity.
Yes, it does.
Among neighbors. So nobody's going to, you know, they're likely to get a rude gesture or a bad comment if anybody tries to talk to them. And add to that, what compounds that is that the attorneys will advise the boards not to contact the individual homeowners, not to talk to their neighbors, but to go through them. Of course, this generates legal fees.
Right.
For the attorney, and the attorney will say, well, you never know, they might have a gun, or they might, you know, get violent, and they might do this, and they might do that. Just creating this culture of hatred, these war zones, the only people who have really benefited by this are the attorneys.
I would not disagree with you on any of that. You know, these are the attorneys. attorneys are kind of like attorneys, like divorce attorneys.
That's what they started out as, is divorce attorneys.
They make money when they create turmoil. And if you're getting a divorce, you know, I think that a husband and wife getting a divorce should work it out.
And here we are back to marriage counseling. Are you trying to tell me something?
Yeah, no, I'm fine. I've been married 37 years. My wife and I are great. She understands all this. But, you know, it is, I've told people this, you know, work it out, because once you get an attorney and they get an attorney, it's over with.
But
the only one that winds up with anything at the end of the day are the attorneys. They split up whatever assets you have. And, you know, and that's, they are preying on homeowner associations now. And
now,
attorneys here in Nevada, they don't like me, so I can say those sort of things.
Well, I mean, that's good. They don't like you anyway, Mike, because let me tell you, well, no, nobody mentioned you. The last time I talked to you was in January, and I called you from Tucson because I had attended the CAI Law Seminar over there. And I sat through one of the sessions they had was going through the legislative updates on what different states had done. And when they got to Nevada, they talked about Senate bill. There were two bills. And they shook their heads and they said, you know, no good's going to come out of these. So I called you that evening.
Right.
And said, did you sponsor these bills? They're not happy with you. And these were the two bills that you had sponsored and passed last year, right?
Right.
And they're not current ones. What was in both of those bills that was displeased our friends at CAI so much?
Well, first of all, let me tell you that any time I sponsor a bill, when my name's on it, they're opposed to it right away. And because they think I'm trying to put them out of business.
Which, you should be.
Which I'm trying to do.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I'm so glad. I'll help you do that.
So that's a problem. You know what? Let me just say, any change that is made, people in general, they don't like change. Okay? And no matter what it is, you know.
Unless they want the change.
Unless they're angling for some sort of change themselves, right?
Right.
Okay. So any sort of change in HOA law, the attorneys and managers immediately oppose it. Okay? They immediately oppose it. And, you know, they yell and scream before they know if they're hurt or not. And, for instance, I can just tell you that years ago, I sponsored bills wanting homeowners. First of all, I wanted managers to get some education, so they just, you know, and become professionals, so they weren't working out of the trunk of their cars and stealing all the money, and they had to be licensed and all that stuff. Well, they didn't like that, and then I wanted homeowners to have to get some sort of education, take classes that would tell them how to run a board. You know, if you're going to be a board member, yeah, I know what you're doing. You know, and of course, everyone opposed that, and that's still a problem we have. And managers now are saying, well, we should have supported you on that. Well, yeah, you know, a homeowner that's overseeing, you know, a budget the size of some of these, and here in Las Vegas, I can tell you that some of these homeowner associations are very large, and they have multi-million dollar budgets. And
some of them are broke.
Yeah, now they're broke.
And now they're broke. They've gone through that multi-million dollars.
Yeah, and they've just kind of threw the money away. They have not planned. They have not reserved funds for a rainy day. They, you know, They didn't even keep up with inflation on things. So they're really hurting now. But the managers, I've heard, have actually said, some of them in the know, that they're pretty decent. And unlike every industry, you'll have a few people that are pretty good.
Yep.
They've said, yeah, we should have made some of these changes years ago and all that, because, you know, they realize if you have educated people, you know, you're way ahead of the curve normally. Doesn't guarantee anything, but...
Do you have manager licensing now in Nevada?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay.
We've had it for years now.
You've had it for years. What they're doing, what CAI is doing, is they're actually pushing the manager licensing in different states. But along with that manager licensing comes an oversight board, adult supervision, if you will, except they've forgotten to have the adults involved. And what they did, I mean, I fought it in Virginia, and we've got it, but what they have is a panel of managers, overseeing managers, because for years when we said, you know what, we need some oversight, they said, no, we've never had any problems, you know, you're just being a troublemaker. Well, then one of the management companies absconded with over $3 million of HOA dues, hit the news, you know, hit the headlines. I mean, he tried to run over a cop and shot at, you know, it got really pretty.
The whole story, yeah.
Yeah, and then they said, oh, we really need some oversight. So they pushed for manager licensing. Now, you know what? Having a piece of paper that you paid the state for is not necessarily going to prove that you're a good guy. But you see, if you're licensed, then we can do something about it. But who's going to do anything about it? Your boss, your friend, your colleague, your coworker. There's no objective oversight involved at all. It's keeping it all in the family. And now they've taken this model and they're peddling it to all the states that don't have the licensing. And some people believe that, you know, okay, so we're going to have this licensing and all the problems are going to go away. They're not.
Right. Well, you know, I would say that in my perfect world, I would say that you need to have oversight of the managers. That's one. I don't mind having managers on the oversight committee, but just for appearance sake, I would sure want just regular citizens on there too. And why I say for appearance sake, and maybe it would be balanced, but let me go back and tell you something from my legislative history. And this was years ago. We had the police here in Nevada, in Las Vegas. There were some incidents with the police and some of people in the minority communities and other things. So there was a call for a citizens panel to review what police officers do, so there could be discipline. All right.
Okay.
And so it's the same type of thing. There was a police oversight panel already, police officers judging their own police officers. And so I was, this was during the legislative session, so I'm going along and I'm wondering, why hadn't the president of the police union come and talk to me? And I thought, you know, obviously they don't like this with lay people overseeing their work. And so finally I went to the head of the police union, and his name was Andy Anderson. I say, hey, Andy, I said, aren't you going to talk to me about this police union thing here? And how does the police union look at this? Aren't you guys opposed to this? And he said, no. He said, we have no opinion on it. That's official, no official opinion. And he says, and we don't care. we'll go one way now. And I said, well, why is that? I said, won't the citizen group be tougher on your guys? And he said, no. He said, actually, they look at it, and nationwide, where they've had those citizen groups, they said they have been easier on the police than police are on themselves. I said, really? He said, that's right. That's why we're staying out of this battle. And so that really opened my eyes. And I thought, well, so the police, if police really police themselves tougher than citizens do, maybe that works in other industries too. So I'm just throwing that out. That doesn't mean it'll work in HOAs, but it was really eye-opening to me to think that police, you know, would get a bigger break from citizens than they would from their own police officers.
Well, if you look at, I mean, CAI has been credentialing managers, and it's all in the family over there, you know. It's
right.
They're all managers. They're all members of CAI. They're teaching each other. They're, you know, it's an incestuous relationship. And when you do have problems, Mike, they claim that they've decredentialed people. I don't know that they have. Of course, it's, oh, well, that's, you know, that's hush-hush. When Tom Skiba was on, we had a caller who called in, and he was saying, oh, of course we do this, and of course we do this. And, you know, they're always blaming the homeowner when something happens. Well, why aren't you providing the oversight? Why aren't you asking for information? Why aren't you doing this? It's all the homeowner's fault. So somebody, we had a call in, and the caller asked Tom Skiba, because he was in the studio, what CAI had done in the case of Winona Blevins. And this, if you remember, was the 82-year-old widow whose house was sold on the courthouse steps and she was evicted.
Right.
Uh-huh. It was screw-ups after screw-ups after screw-ups by licensed, credentialed CAI member management companies, by CAI attorneys. And the question was, what did CAI do in that case?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this story went all over the world, Mike. Do you know what Tom Skiba's response to that was?
What's that?
He said, nobody complained.
Hmm. Well,
nobody filed a complaint. So they did absolutely nothing. I had people from Europe, from everywhere, asking me, oh my gosh, does this happen all the time in the States? You know, do you throw 82-year-old widows out on the street? Do you take their homes away from them? And the whole world knows about it. Nobody complained.
Right. Now,
nothing happened.
My question is did that, were they state licensed? You know, was the manager state licensed in the state that was in?
Well, I don't know, but I'm sure that the attorney was representing the association was,
well,
duly licensed and in a bar, you know, member of the bar. Otherwise, he wouldn't be practicing over there. So I don't know about the state, but you know, we're talking about policing,
yeah,
your own, and the point of my story is that CAI does not seem to have a particularly good track record of policing their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can get away with it, we'll get away with it. That seems to have been the entire way they do business.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't disagree with that. I would say that I think with most organizations like that, and it's a national organization, it's more like a club,
yeah,
than a policing agency. And I think it's up to the states to police them.
But this is the whole thing. This is the point I'm making, Mike. The CAI's come up, and they've got this grandiose plan that they're going to license managers, and they're going to have the managers over, you know, provide the oversight for the managers. Now, it's not only managers, but it's all members of CAI. It's all members of the HOA industry. They had, on a panel of 11 people, they had three homeowners, and these homeowners did not have to be. And initially, this is one change that we managed to get. One of the three had to, at one point, have been a board member.
I see.
But none of them had to live in an HOA. So, you know, when I said, why aren't you picking people who have to live under these regulations, you know what I was told? Oh, well, it's really hard to find anyone. This isn't a place where over 90% of all housing in a lot of counties is in an HOA. It's really hard to find someone. And the reason is because their buddies, the people who know what HOAs are all about, don't live in these things. They don't live in HOAs. So they're looking for people who, you know, who are going to be on their side. And it's just for appearances' sake. Oh, we'll just bring our buddies along, you know. We'll just bring these guys along and put them on the board, and we'll say, yeah, we've got three citizens here.
Right, right. Well, I think it's easy to find people to serve on those oversight committees. I mean, we've had our board or our commission here, and it isn't hard to get people to serve on.
Before we get to the commission, I want to get an update on what's happening there. But before we forget, the FBI was investigating a lot of stuff in Nevada. What's happened to that? It sort of went quiet.
Yeah, it has. And I don't know. You know, the FBI has all the time and all the money in the world. So I don't know what they're doing, and they're very quiet. Appears to me, just from what I've read and what I've seen, that they have one attorney just hammered at the rights, and word we hear, this attorney's trying to cut a deal and go to Florida maybe and all that stuff. And you know, I'm not sure how that investigation's going. I know that it's been going on for 2 years now, and they used our law as a way to start this investigation, because here in Nevada we've said that homeowner associations are governments, and so that was the way the FBI was able to get in and do the investigation, because it's a government, and political corruption is the number one item the FBI looks at. And so they called these HOAs governments, and the actors then in there were political. And that's how they went for it. Now, I don't know where it stands today, and I heard several months ago there were going to be some serious indictments coming down, but I haven't seen it. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I know they have one attorney. They just have her absolutely, I think,
I can't remember her name, but she used to do a show about it in Las Vegas about homeowner associations and how
homeowner talk. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
I heard that she's now practicing in Florida. No.
Well, that's what I heard, that she's gone off or she's wanted to go to Florida. Now I don't know what the deal is. If I was the FBI, I wouldn't let her leave, but maybe...
But you're not the FBI.
You know, who knows what happens, what sort of deals are cut. But I would suspect the FBI is right on the trail of more than just her. Well, there are probably other ones they're looking at. I hope there are, anyhow.
But they're still working on it.
I think they are. Yeah.
Because when this whole thing hit initially, they'd gone in and just confiscated boxes of records.
Right.
From developers, from attorneys, from management companies, from everywhere.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Contractors and all. And this all started over construction defect. And they were scamming on the construction defect, is what is alleged. And so I've been just a pain in the backside of these construction defect attorney for years, and they hate me, but they use CAI to get in. They masquerade as the homeowner's friend and homeowner, you know, they'll be the homeowner's attorney, the board's attorney, and all that. And all they're doing is setting it up for a construction defect lawsuit. And then that is worth
millions
of dollars, right.
Millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And
they wind up with all the money.
Exactly. They're still having to pass special assessments to make the necessary repairs,
right,
in the situations where there are. I mean, I've heard some real horror stories, Mike, about attorneys who've gone in and just really abused the homeowners there.
Right.
Terrified the boards. Wanted upfront money, retainer fees, have imposed special assessments, and then they would take it on contingency, and they would take half of whatever they got. Of course,
right.
You know, they're walking away with everything, and the homeowners are left paying for it. I mean, in some cases, there were some heartbreaking stories, and people would contact me, but they were so afraid of speaking out.
Right, I know.
They
I know.
Were so they, afraid of speaking out.
And I've actually kind of snuck into some of those homeowner meetings. I've sat there, and you listen, and I swear the attorneys just browbeat the homeowners and scare them to death. And, I mean, I've seen it with my own eyes, and they lie to them. And so I don't have any love lost for these construction defect attorneys. Now, are there construction defect in some housing developments? Sure. Of course there are. Should they be taken care of? Absolutely. But it's swung so far to one side now that when an attorney alleges that there are construction defects, the builders now, the developers, they just turn it over to the insurance company and walk away. And that's what they're supposed to do. And actually, builders that try to fight and say, hey, those are my homeowners there. I'm going to come back and repair those. I've seen where the attorneys get the builders locked off of the premises. They can't come on to even do repairs.
Oh, really?
Yes. And so that's created this big schism between the homeowners then and the builder, and that's what the attorneys want to create. And the attorneys even tell the homeowners, why do you want this guy to come back and do the repair? He did it wrong to begin with. Well, you know what? It's like anything made by hand. You know, you can have a defect or a flaw, and that doesn't mean you don't come back and repair it. And you know, out here in Las Vegas, there's a project finishing up right now. It's called City Center, the largest private development in the history of the world, like $9 billion.
Wow.
And it's MGM Mirage, and they've built these hotels on a campus, and it all flows together. And do they have some defects in there? Absolutely they do. And they've had the builders, the subcontractors, come back and fix them. You know, let's come back and fix them. Why do we need to sue? You know what the problem is? Fix it. They had even in the Bellagio Hotel here several years ago. You know, Bellagio is a multi-billion-dollar hotel. They had plumbing leaks, and there was a problem with a fitting. And it was in every bathroom, and the fittings were failing. Well, they got in. They'd shut down a floor at a time. The construction company had come back, and they did all the repairs, and tore bathroom things out, replaced these fittings, retiled and everything, and they'd shut down a floor at a time and worked 24 hours a day. And they got them all done, and the customers of the hotel didn't even know the work was going on. So you can get things done, you know.
And not pay the attorneys in the process.
Right.
We're talking to Senator Mike Schneider of Nevada. Senator Schneider has always been the one to carry legislation that would protect the owners, and he did that last year. We'll find out a little bit about that. And but Mike, still staying on this construction defect situation, I have two questions. Number one, didn't you pass some legislation about it in Nevada, or did you try and failed, or what happened there?
Well, we have passed some.
Okay. Because we talked about it before, I think.
Yeah, it's not perfect, and it doesn't go near far enough. But we have done a few things. Now, the major things still need to be done, and we actually passed a great construction defect bill out of the Senate last session, and it died in the Assembly. The trial attorneys have a lot of sway in the Assembly right now. And I don't want to say anything bad about the Assembly, but they listen to the trial lawyer sob stories, and they fall for them.
They're all trial lawyers as well, presumably, huh?
Right. We're in the Senate. I guess we've been around a little while longer, and we've seen what really goes on. And so we, on a bipartisan basis, we passed the thing out. And but died in the Assembly. So that's, there's a lot of things to be done. First of all, we have to mandate that the builders have to come back and repair. We have to mandate that. And we have to protect the builders so that they aren't locked off the jobs, so that they have the opportunity to repair. And if they can't get it repaired themselves, let's say they don't have the money, but then their insurance steps up and helps. All right, we have to do all that. We have to have it so any you have a checklist of what is wrong with a building, and you go through it, and you just can't make things up as you go through. And that's what happens. I've noticed, because I've gone out on a site where they accuse a builder of construction defect, and I've gone out with some of the experts and looked at it, and these are just made up items, and they want the builders to go out and find more defects for them. It's a game. It's a racket.
Oh, it's a cash cow for the attorneys. Mm-hmm. The other question I had, Mike, was what happened to construction inspectors? You pay your taxes to a municipality, and part of the problem, or part of the job of that municipality, what you're paying for, should be protection. And that would include having inspectors come and inspect every phase of the building. What is happening? Are they not inspecting? I know that a lot of municipalities have cut back, but isn't that something that should be an ongoing program?
Yes, and it is. I'll tell you what my perception of it is. First of all, somewhere you do have an egregious construction problem. I think a lot of things happen when, Las Vegas, like Florida, like Arizona, we were growing so fast, and buildings were getting built so fast that the inspectors, I don't think, were able to cover it all. I think that is a real problem, and I think that municipalities should have been more diligent in some of their work. I'm not going to let them off the hook. But there's that's with real defects. And I know that out here in Nevada, the defects are, most of the bad defects are really not construction. I mean, slab up. The defects are in the dirt work. And so you may have some soil that hasn't been prepared properly. And so you have heaving. We have something out here in Nevada called caliche, and that'll heave up. Or if the water basin has been pumped low, then you'll have these fissures where the land actually kind of sinks in. And I know you've seen that in Florida. where our land will sink in. And so when land is sinking or heaving, the building moves. And actually, you know, we've had houses where it comes apart, and you can see between the ceiling and the wall, you can see daylight. Well, that isn't, you know, I'll tell you right now, that's not a construction defect from the slab up. That was the groundwork that was defective. And so there's no, and here's what's happened. So the lawsuit comes, and the problem is probably with the engineer and the subcontractor who did the groundwork. And somehow they failed, okay? They're the ones that are liable in those cases, in my opinion. And why should the guy that put the plumbing in or put the tile on the roof or laid the carpet, why should they be sued?
Because the attorneys need the money.
That's right. And so that therein lies a huge problem.
Okay, so why do we have inspectors who go out and make sure that the ground has been properly...
Yeah, you know, they go out and look, and I would say most building inspectors really probably on the dirt. They really don't know who they're looking at. They probably talk to some of the guys, and they say, yeah, okay, you've cut down 3 feet, and says on your engineering report here and all that, your soils report, that you have to cut down and remove dirt 3 feet down, bring new dirt in, whatever. And I'm not sure they even know what they're looking at. That would just be my guess.
Well, would the government be liable in that case? I mean, if I'm paying taxes, and part of my taxes go towards protecting me, and I hire somebody to build a building for me, and the engineer comes out and says, oh, yeah, you know, you've done everything you're supposed to do, and passes it, signs off on it, or whatever it is they do. I mean, we're pointing the finger at everyone. The government kind of sits back. Is there a liability
and maybe,
there?
And does the government have a liability? I'm not sure. A lot of these, even on the soil, okay, well, you cut down 3 feet. Well, okay, maybe you had to cut down 5, but the engineer said, and the engineer and the soil test and everything, they said, well, I think we can do it 3 feet. So everybody signs off on 3 feet, but maybe you had to go 5 or 6 feet cut. You know, maybe that's happened. Maybe if there's a fissure developed and the slab starts to tip because water's being pumped out from underneath, well, you know what? Whose fault's that? That could be the water district's fault. They pumped out all the water, but how'd they know? In some of these, things just happen. And I guess you could say, well, it's an act of God. You know, we did the best we could, tried to figure it out, and to mitigate a problem, and the soil still heaved or sunk. You know, everything's different. And but it doesn't let the government off the hook if you put windows in backwards or whatever, you know. So, the government has to do a better job of inspecting. And basically they inspect for just code violation. And attorneys oftentimes sue for little bitty code violations that get missed, like a nailing pattern. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, those get sued all the time. You know, your nailing pattern when you put your sheetrock up is, you know, let's say you have to nail down the wall and nails every 9 inches. Well, you go down the wall and let's say the guy's going with one of those electric hammers, you know, those pneumatic hammers, and they go bam, 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 right down the wall. Some are 12 inches apart, some are 6 inches apart. You know, they're going fast. They're getting paid by the piecework. So the guy comes out and measures, well, you know what, this is off further. You know, it's 12 inches instead of 9. Right here, I got it. We're suing. Well, the house isn't going to fall down. Mm-hmm. You know, the sheetrock's not coming off. You know, that was just a code. And the next nail's at 6 inches. So you got plenty of, plenty there. Let's say your stairs. There's another thing they sue on, stairs. Stairs have to be, when you step down, I don't know what it is. To tell you the truth, you know, maybe your steps are 8 or 9 inches. Well, okay, let's just say they're supposed to be 8 inches or 8.5 inches. Let's call it 8.5 inches, and your step is 8 3/4. Well, it's off a quarter inch. They sue. You know, is anybody going to kill themselves because steps off a quarter of an inch? I don't think so.
Well, here's something else that they're doing, Mike, and this is the article that I sent you. I want to get to this because we are kind of running out of time a little bit here. But part of what's going on, you've got the real estate board, you've got this panel, and part of the law, I guess, is mandatory arbitration, non-binding arbitration.
It can be selected. It isn't mandatory. It can be selected.
And says, okay, it's a mandatory first step before going to court.
Right. To go to court, to get to the court system, you have to do, you can do mediation, all right? You can mediate. And that's what I'd advise everyone to do is try to mediate. Now, if you can't mediate, yeah, you can go to non-binding arbitration, and that leaves yourself open if you don't get your decision to go to district court. Here's what's happening. Is the homeowners are walk in by themselves, and they walk in naked, you know, with no representation. They go to this arbitration, which is non-binding. Then what is happening is the board, the homeowner association, is going with an attorney with all the backup material, and this attorney full of huff and puff and bluster, and they go in and treat this like a real full-bolt blown court case. You don't have all this documentation, whether it's right or wrong, but it is documentation, and it doesn't mean it's they haven't been like through discovery to prove that it's accurate. So they can be lying if they want. But it's very impressive. And the homeowner's sitting there saying, hey, you know, I was been mistreated in this way. And in 99% of the cases, the homeowner doesn't have any documentation to speak of. The homeowner's just there and objecting to the way they're treated or their fines or whatever it is. And so the board wins because they put on a better show. I mean, that's what it is. It's a show. They put on a better show with their high-priced, high-powered attorney, and the homeowner has been outgunned. Then, within you have like 20 days or whatever, there's some little fluky law out there where the attorney for the homeowners goes and files with the court for attorney fees, for mandatory attorney fees, requesting attorney fees. And I would say in virtually every case, the homeowner had no idea that that could happen and has no idea that a district judge is about ready to award attorney fees, and some of these are running $10,000,
$20,000,
$25,000.
Well, this
is... The poor homeowner's getting laid away.
This is a big problem, and I think, I mean, I've done shows on arbitration and ADR, and there's a long article on my website where I did some research and incorporated another article that a friend of mine who is an attorney wrote. And people think that by going to ADR that they're going to save all this money. Well, according to an I-Team, Eyewitness News, homeowners are hammered with HOA arbitration fees. People are being zapped with $20,000, $25,000 fees, as you said. And here's what the attorney for the homeowner said. The lack of oversight, and here we go again, according to Sullivan, has prompted abuse. He says it has created a cozy relationship between the arbitrators and the HOA attorneys to the detriment of the homeowners. And what happens is that when the HOA goes in, the HOA gets to pick. Or actually, you know, you can pick your arbitrator. You have to both agree. Well, the HOA's in court, is in arbitration all the time. They don't have to rely on the law. They can just go in, as you said, with their whiz-bang little shows. And the homeowner doesn't know who the arbitrators are.
Right.
The arbitrators are going to... The arbitrators want to get picked again because they get paid per arbitration, so they're going to find more for the HOA because they're in court more often. And it says 85% of arbitration were decided in favor of the HOA.
Right, right. And what happens is each side, it's just like a going to court. Each side can throw out an arbitrator. All right? So you get a list of five arbitrators. That's about all there are, to tell you the truth. So you get the list of five or six of them. And then you can throw one out as the homeowner, and the association can throw one out that they don't think they like and would agree with them. But here's the whole thing. The homeowner, you're absolutely correct. The homeowner has never been there before. He doesn't know any of the, he doesn't know any of the arbitrators. But that attorney, who probably represents 200 associations.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's not just one association, because one association isn't there all the time in arbitration. But these 200 he represents, you know, he always has an arbitration
mm-hmm.
out of those 200. So that attorney is before those arbitrators all the time.
Yep.
And so the attorney, you know, I think it's just human nature. After a while, those arbitrators feel close to those attorneys.
Well, the arbitrator's going to, you know, it's human nature. They're going to find for the person who's going to get them the most business. The homeowner probably
right.
will never be back in arbitration
again. Yeah, the homeowner will never be back, and this attorney will be back.
Absolutely.
And
tomorrow.
You're right. They get preferential treatment.
Tomorrow. And so this is another venue where the homeowners are getting fleeced.
That's right. I mean, I totally agree with you, and we have to do something to correct that.
What are we going to do about it?
Well, I'll tell you what. There has to be a better mechanism, a better panel that they would go before. I mean, for sure, we don't want these things going to court. There's no
Why not?
Reason. Well, first of all, if you go to court, now you're really in it. All right, you're really in. You're spending a fortune. You're going to spend your $25,000 for your attorney and to prepare for court against the homeowner association. And most people can't afford that $25,000. Then you go, and if you lose, it's like treble damages. And you could pay, you know, you could pay $75,000-$100,000.
Okay, Mike, there's the law. And I can tell you, and I know you'll agree with me, and I can tell you that a lot of these attorneys break the law with gay abandon. They do it time and time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
When you call them on it, oh, did I say that? No, that's not what I meant.
Right.
What I meant was, you know. So they'll do whatever they can to get away. The homeowner, for the most part, doesn't understand what's going on. An arbitrator is not required to protect your legal rights. An arbitrator is supposed to find median, you know, common ground between you, or make a decision. Or the mediator will find common ground, the arbitrator will make a decision. But your rights would be violated if you go to court and you've got a legal right or a constitutional issue. The judge is bound to protect those legal rights, if you can make the correct argument, that is. But there's got to be a different way of doing it. There's got to be some real oversight, not this Mickey Mouse will bring the, you know, the CAI attorneys and parade them through and stick them on a panel. I mean, it's not working, Mike. It's really not working.
I know it isn't, and it's failing, and the homeowners are being let down.
They are.
You're absolutely correct.
But thank you so much for joining us, Mike. We're out of time, believe it or not.
Well, it was fun. True.
Let's do it again, and let's find out. Let's come up with an idea of how we can really, really sort of protect the homeowners in this.
You bet. And hey, the next time you're out in the West, come to Las Vegas. We have great rooms out here, and they're really cheap right now.
Thanks, Mike.
All righty. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos. Someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.